Welcome to Outbeat Radio, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we are your hosts. I'm Sheridan Gold, and next to me is my co-host and wife, and tonight's special guest, Diana Grayer. Diana will be discussing her new theater company, Our Lives Matter Theater Company, and her new production, Release, Unearthing the Silent Rumblings. Release, a Black production depicting the African-American experience, consists of four short plays and tackles the word minority and biracial friendships, police confrontation, and the insurrection. Not only will we hear from Diana, but we will also hear from our cast. Welcome, Di, and we're so glad to have you on as our guest.
It's nice to be here. My wife is interviewing me. How special is that? So stay tuned for the show. But first, here's news and events from our Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of April 3rd, 2022. While national attention has been focused on Florida's new Don't Say Gay law, banning elementary school teachers from even mentioning LGBTQ people in their classroom, 14 other states have already introduced legislation that would either ban school discussions on LGBTQ people or allow parents to object to such discussions. In fact, this month, South Dakota just signed into law House Bill 1012, a bill that bans public colleges and universities from requiring students and staff to, quote, attend or participate in any training or orientation that teaches, advocates, acts upon, or promotes diverse concepts. The broadly written bill could prohibit discussions on marginalization of LGBTQ people. The other states considering similar bills include Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Missouri, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And high school students in Passaic, New Jersey held a walkout to protest a new school district policy that prohibits them from flying the Pride flag. After students flew the rainbow flag last year in honor of Pride Month, the Board of Education passed a policy declaring that only the state, school, and American flags could be flown. About 75 students from the three public high schools in Passaic marched together, chanting, "Walk out, raise our flag." Using a bullhorn, student Amari Gatani reportedly shouted, "We're not going to stop until we get what we want. We put up the flag last year with no problem. Then this new policy came out of the blue, and they pushed it under the rug." The students also attended last Monday night's school board meeting to protest the policy, and one 15-year-old student, Jared Guevara, told the board he'd like to see them all thrown out of office. Some school board members have indicated support for the students, or at least a willingness to keep talking about the policy, but it's unclear whether change will come or not. Peter T. Rosario, a former Board of Trustees member, thinks the ban is a no-brainer. He said, quote, "Your job is not to hurt kids, first and foremost." And he added, quote, "There are hard decisions to make. This isn't one of them. Rescind the policy." And here locally in a related story, every morning for much of the past year, three flags have been raised above Miwok Elementary School in East Petaluma: the U.S. flag, the California state flag, and a pride flag. But sometime in January, that all changed. The school's Progress Pride flag went missing. A police investigation was launched, but there are no leads, leaving concerned parents and school community members to speculate while also working to fashion a response to the jarring incident. In the wake of what some school administrators have called a de facto hate crime, the five elementary schools that comprise the Eastside Old Adobe Union School District have come together to make a statement against the specter of hate. The five campuses and the district headquarters each raised pride flags last week, the week before spring break, in a show of solidarity with Miwok Elementary School. Miwok's principal, Mary Reynolds, said processes for raising and lowering the flags got upset in the return to school after winter break, leading to the flags being left up overnight at least once. In the aftermath, Ho provided an updated pride flag for the school, one that recognizes intersex people, and the school adopted a new process. Reynolds added, quote, "We came together as a community and we have really gained strength. We're putting the flag back up every day, each day, year round," end quote. And here locally, I save the date for you on Saturday, May 7th, 2022. The annual LGBTQIA+ Family Symposium will take place in Santa Rosa. The entire family is invited to connect with community and learn about LGBTQIA+ family resources, rights, and advocacy. This is a free event and will include a family picnic, Spanish translation, and childcare. You can learn more at nblgbtqifamilies.org. And also the Queer and Trans Youth and Allies Camp is a fun and welcoming opportunity for LGBTQI+ youth and allies to be outside and learning and growing with their peers. The QTYA camp weaves together nature, connection, wilderness, skills, reflection, and mindful practices in art and community building. Youth will learn more about themselves, the land they're on, and how to feel connected and resilient in these difficult times. Scholarships are available, and you can learn more by calling area code 408-656-9399. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof. And as our guest tonight, we have Diana Grayer, who is going to discuss her new theater company and her new production, Release, Unearthing the Silent Rumblings. Diana, thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us tonight.
It's not a problem. That's funny.
So tell us how your production came about.
Oh, my production came about 2020. It all started after the George Floyd murder on national TV that we saw over and over and over again. I wrote a black production at that point. And then as I would say last year, that was something that came across an invitation for a play festival that came across my screen. And I really was attracted to it because of the prompt. It was talking about 2020, the year that so much was going on in 2020. And what stood out for me was the conversations after. And the one scene that kept coming across my mind was the insurrection and how the white people were treated versus those from the Black Lives Matter movement with George Floyd's death. And I was sitting in front of the TV watching the scene of the insurrection. And I cried and I cried because I knew in my soul, in my spirit, and my knowledge that if the tables were turned and they were black people, that would have been a massacre. We would have been killed. And so I wrote a piece like in 30 minutes, no more than an hour I spent on this piece. It just flowed out of me. And so in my submission letter to Upstage Napa Valley, I wasn't sure they would accept my piece. Pictures Don't Lie, I named this piece Pictures Don't Lie, comparing the both of those events. And in my submittal letter, I say, I don't think you have the courage to show this in that area because it was pretty predominantly white. But 2 days later, the artistic director wrote me and said, yes, we want your piece. And so at that point, we went over and we did this piece. I found two black men to act in this particular piece, Pictures Don't Lie, in St. Helena County. And it went over well. And you were there. So it was just a perfect setting. The audience really engaged it. They sat and they didn't leave when it was time for talkbacks with the two actors and myself as the playwright and the director. And so that spurred me on to this piece, this production, because the white audience, 99% white, wanted to talk about race. They didn't have a place to talk about race. And they appreciated me bringing that piece to them. And so I say, you know what, this is needed. And I felt like I wanted to produce something for myself. So because the pandemic and it slowed me down for the last 2 years. And so here I am back on track. Things are opening up And so I decided, okay, this is opportunity to educate and to open up for the community to be involved in talking about race. So I wanted to put Black Lives experiences on stage. And so that's what Release is. Release, unearthing the silent rumblings, because Black people are holding a lot. I hear stories. I know because of my own experience and knowledge, Black people are squelched, and I want to give them an opportunity to be center stage and for people to hear the experiences of Black people.
That all sounds so fantastic. You said from your own experience. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
My own experience of being a Black woman in society, in America's society, I know that I'm not seen as well as other people are seeing. I had a situation that happened to me in my own neighborhood where I was walking in my own neighborhood and police passed by me and turned around and looked at me strangely, checking me out in the neighborhood. Those kinds of things, they affect us as Black people. And I know, Cher, I talk to you about it all the time. If you were there with me at the time, that wouldn't happen, or that would never happen to you. They wouldn't be checking you out. Those types of things. And at one point, I was getting stopped a lot by the police. And as a therapist, I hear clients talk about their experiences with racism and being spotlighted and treated differently and the microaggressions that go on and on and on in people's lives. I mean, you know, just recently we had a cottage, a little small place for rent, and a woman came in to the yard and she wanted to look for the owner of the home. And what did she say? She said, "So do you work here?" She just assumed that I was like a handy person or something, I don't know. But those types of things, and Black people have to deal with. And a lot of Black people are in positions and jobs that they can't speak up about because they don't want to lose their jobs. But things continue to happen. As I say, I'm a therapist, I hear things, and I know have friends, and I hear things, and family members, I hear things. So that's pretty much my experience around it. And I just see the discrepancy, and it hurts, and it's painful, and I get angry about it. Just like what I saw with the discrepancy around how Black Lives Matter protesters were treated versus the insurrectionists.
It's hard to know how to respond on that because it's like so devastating to hear you talk like that. And your experience, I think a lot of people around here don't really understand the experience of having black skin every single day going out into the public. And these little comments that people say that are so hurtful, like, do you work here in your own home? And there's a new concept now that's out there, a new phrase called microaggressions. And it's gaining more and more popularity. But how would you define microaggressions using that particular event that you just told us about?
Well, microaggressions are those, they could be conscious or unconscious statements, and based on prejudice and stereotypes of people, black people, or marginalized people, but black people hear it a lot. And they're subtle, some of them are, but they're these ideas that people have in their minds, they have to be aware of. And it's important that we open the eyes of people. And a lot of people don't want to say anything about when there's a microaggression because of the fear of backlash or the fear of someone getting fired or something like that. I've had people tell me about microaggressions. Like one is one in particular, and you know about this one. When somebody hear a black person talking and they say, "Oh, you're so articulate." There's a mindset. There's something in them that thought that black people are not able to speak a certain way, proper English, if you want to call it. And so they are like surprised and like, why are you surprised? Kind of.
Right. That's the question. Why are you surprised? And people, that's what you're talking about. People hold these beliefs. They're not even aware of the beliefs they hold until these things come out like, oh, you're so articulate, or, oh, you work here. And so the things behind that, what you just said, you think Black people shouldn't be articulate, mm. or you think Black people shouldn't own homes. Mm. And so when you see this in your face, that it doesn't fit into your scheme of things, mm. you have these little comments, and they're called microaggressions. Mm. And people of color, Black people, have to deal with this all the time, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah. get in touch with your prejudices and your biases and all of that.
How does one get in touch with their prejudices and biases and all that? What do you suggest? How do they even have the concept of having these biases that they're not even aware of? How can they become aware of them?
But that's really important. That's a good question, because being aware of being culturally sensitive, it starts there. And I think that's why it's really important for Black people and brown people and LGBTQ people, anybody on the margins, to speak up and to tell people and let them know, to educate them that they are saying these things. Wake them up. But, you know, that's a whole subject in itself. How do you wake people up?
Well, yeah. And so you have found a way to wake people up.
That's how I do it. I write books, children's books, to help wake people up. And I write these, I would say, beautiful, empowering at the same time, and very telling pieces. And I'm hoping that these four pieces will wake people up and stir them up to think and wake them up like we're talking. Yeah.
Why don't you... Would it be okay if you described your four plays? I mean, without giving away too much, because this was premiered this weekend, like we said in the introduction, but your production will also be performed next weekend, this coming weekend, April 9th and 10th. So without giving too much away, could you tell us a little bit about your four plays?
Yeah, well, the first one is a monologue a young woman is doing. It's very powerful. And it's about the word minority, which is under my skin every time I hear it. So you kind of get a sense of that, one of the plays. And then the other one is about a mother and a son just minding their own business, and they are confronted by two police officers, which is going to be very, very powerful. And I don't want to give too much away, but that's just... something. And then the other one is going to be about two women, a Black woman and a white woman, confronting microaggressions or implicit biases, just feelings of not being seen or heard, which is very powerful. And then we have Pictures Don't Lie. I mean, they all have a different name. I didn't tell you the names, but and then Pictures Don't Lie, and I told you about that one. So that's going to be very powerful. And we have a beautiful opening, which is going to be very powerful. So the two women title one, the title for that one is How Thick Are Your Blinders? And then the other one with the police officers and the Black mother and son is Officers, Why Do You Hate Us? So very telling titles for each of those. So I'm really excited. It's just really powerful to see it all come together. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be happening. And me, it's happened, right? So I'm just really excited about it.
So the idea is for these short plays to wake people up, as we said. What's going to happen after the production is over, when people are done clapping and giving you the standing ovation you so rightly deserve? What is going to happen after?
Well, my goal was, and it is, I plan to have talk back, where the audience gets to talk with the actors and myself. And then afterwards, well, we're going to have tables in the back. And so I want the community to gather around the tables to talk about race and to check in with themselves about the production. What did they notice? What did they feel? I will be the facilitator. I have some questions that I'm going to ask the tables to talk about amongst themselves, and then have someone speak out loud about what they discuss. And so the community is working and looking at racism and race and how can we do better with each other. The foundation of pulling all this together is to bring about allyship, to have the community see the struggle and want to take action. We need our allies. I'm all for helping allies be allies and learning how to be better allies. And better allies take action. They're proactive. Anti-racist is about being active, not just going to protests and Black Lives Matter, rah, 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 and then nothing happens. Then you go back home and you all cozy. You have the opportunity, you have the privilege to not have to worry about the things that Black people have to worry about. And so the whole point is to have allies take more action and changing racism in our community, especially here in Sonoma County. That's what we can do. And that's what I want to do. And this is how I do my activism.
Your production is meant to wake people up. And then the facilitated discussion afterwards is meant to maybe come up after brainstorming and having people talk about the production and how they felt about it and how they were affected. The idea is to come up with an action plan for people to not just go back home and be comfortable again, but to take some kind of action. Those are your two goals.
Yeah, because people, like when I was in St. Helena, they didn't know what to do, how to do it. Even during the George Floyd murder, calling your friends, check on your Black people, check on them, see how they're doing during that time. They didn't know what to do or how to do it, or like, oh, if I do that, I'm going to point out their Blackness or something like that. It's like, no. If you have a sick friend, what do? You call. If you have somebody, a friend who's depressed and sad, what do? You check on them. Black people being murdered on national TV, you check on them, right? So yeah, I'm looking forward to the communication and see what comes out of it.
I'm curious, you talked about that, and I'm assuming that those are your hopes for your production. Do you have any other hopes that come out of this discussion and the performance besides waking people up and trying to get people to understand what it means to be an ally in action? Are there any other hopes you have for this production?
Yes, I would love to have this be some kind of training tool to use to go to different organizations and corporations and schools to let them get a sense of the rumbling, the silent rumblings that goes on, because Black people don't get a chance to talk about their experiences and what they feel and as a result of racism, as a result of the insurrection and the discrepancy and how Black lives are treated versus white lives are treated. How often do you hear people talking about that out in public, unless there's a murder? And we need to do something before there's a murder. We need to be vigilant. I need my allies, my white allies, to speak up. And I created a list of ways that they can help. And there are so many things that they can do. There's lots of things. People say, I don't know what to do. There's lots of things they can do, even just basic things here in Sonoma County that they can do.
Well, I love the fact that you see beyond just this performance. You want to take this, shall we say, on the road. You want to use these plays for training purposes. And I can see, I hope people come because, and maybe really even think, how can this fit into your organization? Because even if you just took one of the plays and then had Diana come and facilitate a discussion around race after seeing one of these plays, I can see that being very successful in corporations, in schools, colleges. It's a great way to open up a discussion when you see a performance, and then you can talk about how you were affected, and then that can lead to discussion about what we can do as white allies. And that's really terrific that, you know, one little prompt, conversations after, started this whole thing, like a whole snowballing effect, which is one thing I just really admire about you. The same thing happened when you had one of your plays rejected, oh, I don't know how long ago, 2014 or 15, you had a play rejected, and you just said, well, I'm going to just do it myself. And instead of one play, I'm going to make four plays. And then you had your whole production called Private Lives, Private Lies, which had 19 actors and had four different plays about four different scenarios that the LGBTQI community deal with. And it's like the way you handle current events, you put your creativity into it and you invite people in to see what's going on inside your head, which I think is just so terrific, Diana. It's just, you're so creative and wise, and a lot of people, even your friends, probably don't know how you feel. And when they come to see this play, they will get a little more insight to you because these are your words. These are not someone else's words.
Yeah, I love talking about the human condition because a lot of people don't talk about it in the way that I do. And I'm not afraid to. And my plays are empowering. These plays will empower Black people. Private Lives, Private Lies, empowered LGBTQI people. It gives them a voice. And that's what I believe in. Having marginalized communities have an opportunity to take center stage. And it's really important. It's amazing that the 8 productions of Private Lives, Private Lies touched a lot of lives and educated a lot of people.
Right. You're getting to the actors, that the actors are part of those people that are affected. And after our music break, in our next segment, we are going to listen to the actors' comments and how they are affected and what they have learned about themselves and about the world. And they're very fascinating. So I encourage you all, after our music break, to tune in to hear more about the play from Diana. She will talk about her theater company called Our Lives Matter Theater Company, and you will hear from her cast. Diana, do you want to talk about the song that you'd like us to play tonight?
Lately, I've been listening to a lot of Nina Simone's. I mean, there's many I can choose from, but I'm feeling really good right now. So Nina Simone, Feeling Good. I just love her when she sings this song. And I'm feeling good about all the work I've done with this production, with my actors. Just taking on the load because it's really important to me, to who I am as a Black woman, as a lesbian woman, a proud to be who I am. And so I'm feeling good. Thank you, Nina Simone.
All right, everybody, Nina Simone. Feeling good.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, and a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun
So that was a beautiful song.
Oh, yes.
One of your
Nina
favorites.
Simone. It was so good. I just love it. She just makes me feel good inside. Mm-hmm. Her voice, you know, such soul.
It's hard to feel bad when you're listening to Nina. So if you just joined us, this is Living Proof, and we are talking to Diana about her new production. It's called Release, Unearthing the Silent Rumblings. And last segment before our music break, Diana was talking about the four plays that are part of this production. And then I had mentioned that we have interviewed her cast members. And so we'd like to play that for you now. Is that okay, Diana?
Yeah, this sounds like a good time to do that.
All right. So enjoy, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Hi, my name is Tiffany Tattoo. I'm going to be performing a monologue called I Am Not a Minority in Diana Grayer's production, Release, Unearthing the Silent Rumblings. So I relate to my monologue because as being a person of color and being of mixed race, I do look to my mom a lot for different situations in life where I don't know where to look at it or how to approach it, especially, I guess, being a person of color. I've had to come up and discuss race with people, even in uncomfortable settings. And it's just important to bring that discussion up so that people can have, I guess, a better understanding. And I've had to do that in lots of classes, like over the past few years in high school. So something I've learned through being in this production is that even if, like, I guess you're shy and you haven't ever even had a lot of experience acting, that you don't have to be afraid to get out of your comfort zone and talk to other people, like the other cast members. Like, everyone's so open, and it's just an amazing environment to be a part of, even if, like, I'm shy or scared of being in a new situation. It's just a really nice thing to be a part of and to get to learn more about myself and others through. I guess I would want in the audience to know that it's okay to talk about race, and it doesn't have to be an uncomfortable discussion to have. A lot of people, especially I guess in school settings, like to veer around the topic of race or discrimination because they don't want that tension in the classroom. But tension is okay sometimes. That sometimes that tension needs to be there to get over that and then to come to a realization that we all need to, I guess, just come together to help this situation play out.
My name is Zoe Kimberly, and I play Allie in Diana Grayer's short play, How Thick Are Your Blinders? The ways that I relate to Allie's character in this play is I think I can really be a know-it-all sometimes and always seem to have a response to everyone's opinions or experiences. I think the biggest, most important thing that I've learned from this play and this character is that the first step in being a really good ally is to learn how to listen. Even if I think I know what the answer or the response is going to be or should be, I just need to shut up and listen. What I want the audience to know is that being a good ally is, there's not necessarily a straight line or a clear path, and that you have to be prepared for things to be a little messy and unclear and just keep moving forward with it and taking the feedback that you get, but pushing forward with learning how to be a better ally.
My name is Molly Drock, and I play Keisha in Diana Grayer's play, How Thick Are Your Blinders? I relate to Keisha because I understand, as a Black woman, her being frustrated with her white friend not understanding her experience. What I learned about myself is I can only really stay true to my own experiences. And I know what I've learned in life is it's important to ask people more questions, listen more to people. And basically that's it. It's just important to listen to people. I would like people who come to the play to just be willing to listen to what messages the actors are talking about, and then be able to have a conversation afterwards and just learn maybe one thing new about the Black experience that they didn't realize or never knew.
My name is Joy Marchbank. I play the role of Miss Halloway in Diana Grayer's the short play, Officer, Why Do You Hate Us? I am a mother of four Black boys. And I know that growing up, it wasn't easy for us. And I've seen my siblings hassled by the police more than once, and I have myself. And it hits home to be in a position where you're scared, not only for your own life, but for the lives of your children. And you're angry, you're upset, you want change, and to feel like you don't see it. Like, there's not much you can do to change things. It's a frustrating thing. And so I feel her fear, I feel her anger, I feel her sadness, and her determination as a mother to keep her kids safe. What I want the audience to know is that it's okay to be angry, because that's what I'm learning. I'm learning that as a pastor's kid and someone who's always kind of shied away from confrontation, it's okay to speak up.
Hello, my name is Zion Radford, and I play the character Z in Diana Grayer's short play, Officers, Why Do You Hate Us? Z is a teenager who had just 6 months ago had gotten his brother shot and killed wrongfully, and he ends up confronting two police officers who claim to be, who's saying they're good officers, but Z just doesn't have any of that. What I've learned about myself is that I've never been harassed by an officer before, but when I look at people who have, and when I hear the stories, and it's infuriating, and I guess it can store up a lot of anger, and I'm never able to let it out sometimes. I want the audience to know that even if something like this has never happened to you, that no matter what, you can still speak up against it, even if you haven't experienced it.
My name is David Perez, and I play Officer Dickerson in Diana Grayer's short scene, Officer, Why Do You Hate Us? I relate to my role of Officer Dickerson because my uncle used to be a chief of police in another county in California. And he was always the role model that most officers would want to portray. He treated everybody with dignity and respect. He still maintained his authority, but not any bias while doing so. Something I've learned by being in this play is, despite how progressive society has become, there are still many deeply seated issues that have come from the past and have really never left. It's just been quieter. It's harder to see despite everything that's going on. I want the audience to know, especially those on the police force, protocol is protocol, and, there is a system that needs to be adhered to. However, just like any other business, if something's not right, say something about it. If people are telling you something's not right, listen. Don't tout your protocols. Don't tout your codes. Listen to where the issues are and do something about it.
My name's Gene Calhoun. I play Jonathan in Diana Grayer's play, Pictures Don't Lie. I find that there's a lot of Jonathan in me. There's a lot of sort of looking at the other side, taking a sort of a logical, clear approach to things, and not being naive about anything. Jonathan knows how things are, how things have happened. I've learned that there's a lot more to be done. It's not like I'm learning this, but it's realizing that the things that are being discussed have been discussed before, and that every little step to get people to talk about it, to bring up the topics, is a step forward. I want audience to know that it can be talked about, that it should be talked about. And if they don't have a place to talk about it, they can create a place to talk about it.
My name is Tyrone Lewis McCarter. I'm really happy to join this troupe for a moment, or maybe indefinitely. I happen to play a character by the name of Malcolm in Diana Grayer's segment, Pictures Don't Lie. My character, Malcolm, is a character who is a school therapist licensed in academia. Because of situations like COVID, because of situations with the insurrection on January 6th, he finds himself very frustrated and he needs to talk to people. The thing is that all of his friends who are not Black are not responding to him, especially one particular friend. And he finds a problem with that. As a healer who helps everyone out, because that's his profession, that's his life goal, nobody's responding to him the way that he gives himself to the world. And it's causing him a moment of frustration. And in that point, he talks to his one friend who always answers that phone call. And therefore, the therapist is indeed a therapy. And he's using his best friend, who in this case is a teacher, but because they've grown up long enough together, this is his crutch, this is his pal, this is his buddy. And he goes through a mix of emotions that way. Every Black American male will feel Malcolm's story. I'm not so much embodying a character as I am embodying the aspect and the archetype of every single Black male in America. We have all felt the same way Malcolm does. And that's very important. My desire to be in this play is to reconnect with my Black community, which I've been severely disconnected from for a lot of years. And I've already learned it by seeing. I saw a youth, Zion. I just saw him stand up there and be so happy to do so and be there with his mom and not be embarrassed, be a partner, be a best friend, no different the way I feel the way with my mother. He inspired me just by looking at him. He reminded me that there's a future out there that needs our growth, that needs our dedication. You know, they're the soil, then let me be the water. Let me be the sunlight that helps you grow into something better. So yeah, by deciding to do this, I was searching for something and somehow I found it.
So Diana, listening to your cast, did you learn anything or were you privy to some things that you didn't know about them?
I was just amazed how they put it all together. I can feel that they're connected to their roles mm-hmm. and how important those roles are. And I like the fact that they are appreciating being a part of this because this is some of their first opportunities to be on the stage.
Yeah.
And that's a very powerful thing. And that's what I'm all about. That's what I want to do is give all these young people, even older people, opportunity to take the stage. They don't even know that they're capable of it. When I meet them, you know, like one of my other hats I wear is, you know, recruiting actors. And I'm going to different stores, Oliver's, Safeway. If I meet them on the sidewalk somewhere or at a party somewhere, I'm always asking people if they want to act. These are the 9 people that said, yes, I want to do it. Even though I'm afraid to do it, I want to do it. And they did it. And they're doing it.
Yeah, we talked about before the break about how you hope to affect people. And most of the time, people go to the theater and they want to be affected as an audience member, but maybe they don't realize that actors are affected as well. And this is important, hard conversations to have. And I remember Tyrone, the last cast member that we heard, talked about being so inspired by Zion, who is a 14-year-old young man who's in your play as well, with his mom, and they're in the same play, which is really amazing. But Tyrone said that if Zion was the earth and the soil, then let Tyrone be the water. Like, he wants to help inspire the youth, and he's been inspired by the youth. So it's like a give and take, and I was just really caught by that. It was compelling to me to hear that, and other cast members as well.
It's amazing that he said that it's a possibility that he wants to continue. And that's what I want. I want to form a group of actors who wants to go around with me and do this piece of work.
Well, what do you mean go around? Tell us.
Well, I would like to do trainings with this piece. I would like to go to schools and have these different short plays be performed and then have discussions about them. Because they stir people to discuss, to talk, to feel, to be affected. And I want people to be affected and to trust themselves to talk about issues and have an opportunity to come forth and come out. about concerns and issues in their lives. And that's what we've experienced. You know that. When I'm sitting in the back of my previous plays and people are crying and being moved and coming to me at the end or at intermission, and they say, "Hey, Diana, I can relate to each and every one of those scenarios. Thank you, thank you, thank you." They get to release. These pieces can be very cathartic for some of them because their voices are not heard. And so when they get to see themselves on stage through the actors, they feel like alive. They feel like, wow, I'm seen, I matter, I exist, you know? Otherwise, they don't get to see themselves much.
It sounds like you, I mean, I know you are because, you know, I'm married to you, but for somebody listening right now who, and they might not know you as well as I do, it sounds like you have a special vision and mission to help people come to the center, mm-hmm. who maybe wouldn't have this opportunity. So tell us a little bit about your philosophy and the theater company that you have started.
I didn't think I would be doing this, really. I don't know. Life is mysterious in a way. This woman, Wida, I met her on Facebook, and she loved what I was doing. And eventually she said, "Diana, I think you should do something with your plays." And she said, "You should come up with your own company, you know, get a fiscal sponsorship. There's lots of money out there," she says, "for the work that you're doing, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion." And she said she would help me from bottom up. She would help me make it happen. So I say, "Ooh," I was scared at first here, you know, it's like, "Ooh, I don't know."
What were you scared about?
I just didn't want to, and the business part of it, the paperwork. I'm just so used to doing things on my own and not waiting for other people to say yes or no. I just do it. But, you know, I say, I'm going to be open. Let's see what's happening. If she's going to be there to consult, she's going to be there to stand by my side and help me do this thing, I'm going to try it. And you were there to be a part of it as well. So I say, okay, let's do this. So we had to first come up with a name of our company, and we came up with Our Lives Matter Theater Company. And that's really important to me because our lives matter. And that means all the marginalized people, like the LGBTQI and women, and talking about issues that, you know, like depression. So I want to do those things. And I have a lot of other ideas that I want to produce as well. And then the Black production that I'm doing now is so important. And I have some other ones that I'm going to be doing, something on bullying. I just want to teach people and educate people and empower people. So that's why I decided to go ahead and do this Our Lives Matter Theater Company and see what happens, see what shows up. And so I just want to share it, what our mission is and our vision. Our Lives Matter Theater Company creates and presents contemporary theatrical productions, workshops, and trainings that will inspire, empower, and change lives. And the vision is, human beings are affected by many situations such as injustice, rejection, depression, and other mental health issues. Often people don't have the love, support, or the wherewithal to be able to maneuver these challenges and complexities. OLMTC wants to give actors and audience members the opportunity to be affected, educated, inspired, empowered, as well as be entertained. I don't know how much entertaining is going to be this one, this production, but it's going to be really powerful. So I'm happy where we are. And it's really interesting because my logo, I want to say something about the logo with the heart, with the director's chair. It's so poignant. It's so matching where my heart was. Did you know that we got the okay from the fiscal sponsor on February 14th? Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
And then my logo is with the heart, red heart.
Yeah, that's really great. So where can people see this logo that you're talking about?
Oh, on my website.
Oh, what's the website?
The website is olmtco.org.
So OLMTCO, so Our Lives Matter Theater Company, and the company is CO. Dot O-R-G.
Yeah.
Okay, and then they can go there and they can order tickets on that website?
Exactly.
And they can see the logo you just talked about. That yes. means so much to you. The red heart with the director's chair on it. And the back of the director's chair in little letters says, Our Lives Matter Theater Company.
Correct. So yeah, everything I do is really from the heart and from that place of wanting to teach and educate other people about issues about the marginalized community. So yeah, I'm just really proud of my actors. I'm just really blessed to have actors I find that are really dedicated to the topics that I'm talking about. But in the future, I would like to have a group of dedicated actors who will follow me around and be part of this, like a group or something. So that's why I'm trying to find a grant writer so we can get grant money, so I can pay them more money, and so we can do this thing.
So your idea is to have a group of actors, and maybe they're in one play one for one training, and maybe they're in another training, mm-hmm. they're in another play, like, so they have to like memorize all the lines. Is that what you're thinking?
Something like that. I like what Tyrone said yeah. about having a troupe.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that would be great. And there's a lot of other things that we need. But you
like
know,
what?
I would love to have my own building at some point too. So that I can do rehearsals there, because we are in our garage right now, but I need a bigger space. You know, there's a lot of vacant buildings around Sonoma County. Maybe someday we'll find something that we can use. But I'm always needing volunteers. If there's anybody out there who want to come out and help us and support us, there's lots of different jobs that I need. Mm-hmm. Happening. I'm looking for a photographer and a videographer, and we need a storage unit, that type of stuff, you mm-hmm. know, to put all the props in. And
I want to go back to what you said about having your own building, that it's a dream of yours to have your own building. And I know one of the obstacles to getting women, specifically single mothers, to act in your plays is really tough because of childcare. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's another thing I would like. If we were in a building where we can have space to rehearsal, and then I can hire somebody to babysit the kids and put them over there, because the two women that we have, one has 4 kids and one has 3 kids. Joy has 4 and Molly has 3, and really adorable kids. But, you know, mom wants to get out and do her thing too. And sometimes she doesn't have the opportunity to do that, and babysitting always comes to be a part of that distraction. So I would love to have a building with the extra room, and then the kids can go over there and play with the babysitter and do that thing, and the moms can be rehearsing and doing their thing. I want to use the community as actors. We don't need any professional people to do this work. I want to teach in the process of giving the community opportunity to take the stage and represent themselves, you know, and to mm-hmm. talk about important issues.
Yeah, seems like if it's an equal playing field for everyone to be involved in community theater, then the obstacles like childcare need to be dealt with so that these women who don't have partners to help out can replenish themselves, do mm-hmm. something for themselves, and be really good parents because they're giving themselves time yes, away exactly. from the kids, doing important work.
And they're enjoying it. I mean, for the first time to be on the stage, wow. That yeah. says a lot.
I really want to encourage everyone who's listening tonight. We have one more week of performances, one more weekend. So next Saturday evening is April 9th, and the play starts at 7. And then there's a matinee on April 10th, which is Sunday at 3 o'clock. And you can go to Diana's website. Well, actually, it's Our Lives Matter Theater Company.org. or olmtco.org to find out more information, order tickets online, and be part of this growing phenomenon, I guess you might say, of talking about race. And what did you call it, Di? What is
it? DEI.
What does it stand for?
Diversity, equity, inclusion. And people are adding the B on there, belonging. And I feel like they're belonging to this thing.
Yeah.
They're feeling good about it.
Oh, so
Cher, what's your opinion? You've seen it. You've been there. You helped. Cher has been very helpful with coaching and line coaching. And you're just so talented. And they appreciate your help. And I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Yeah, the play is very, very powerful. I can't watch it without tearing up. And just putting myself in a mother's position when the police come and wanting to protect my son. Or the conversation between the black friend and the white friend. I mean, to be honest, you and I have had those conversations as well. Being a mixed race couple, race plays into our dynamics. And I have to be a good enough wife and a good enough ally to listen and not have my own ideas all the time. But, you know, you might have good ideas and I need to be quiet sometimes, more than sometimes, and really listen to what you have to say. And I've learned that along the way. And I don't know why I didn't know that in the beginning, but I thank you for teaching me. And I think people who come to these plays will maybe see a little bit of themselves in these plays and maybe learn something. And I encourage the listener, if you haven't had a conversation about race, it doesn't matter what color you are, if you haven't had a conversation about race with loved ones, with friends, come on out and Diana will create a safe space to have that conversation to start it off. Mm-hmm. Any last words, Diana? We do have to close our show.
Yeah, that was great what you said about the facilitated part of the performances, because we did have the tables in the back. And that's a part of coming to the show. There are questions and there are conversation within the community to wrap your head around this topic. And so it's great. So come on out and support the cause. Please come on out and be an ally. And for people of color, just come and be empowered.
Thank you so much, Diana. It's been so great having you on tonight. And I hope people got something out of this show. I hope they did. I expect they will. Yes. Remember, like Diana, you too can be living proof that through sharing your wisdom, your passion, your experience, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop.
For Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roner Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.